Welcome to part two of our conversation with James Anito about Darkness Among Us. What was it like having that nightmare? Was it like you were watching a movie and you were doing this, or were you in your own body and you had some whole other drive and reason to be performing such horrible acts?
So oddly enough, it was first person. It wasn't a third person perspective. I wasn't like watching out of body, like an astral projection state. It was like I was first person, like you would play a first person shooter, first person game, or see a first person movie, which has happened. But yeah, it was in that sense, like I was living the moment. And, you know, I think doing it, I liked it. You know, in the nightmare, I liked it. There was joy. Like, of course, my consciousness was fighting it. And that's how I came out of the nightmare. You know, of course, I would never attest to that. You know, I have a child myself. I could never imagine ever that sight. And, you know, so, but in the nightmare, I loved it. I loved doing what I did. And it was sickening. Like, just to even talk about it to this day, and it's been quite a few years. But something that I always remember to the full detail, like I'm pretty forgetful. Like I've read so many books. I take pieces of knowledge of it and I forget a lot of it, you know, and I'm terrible at that because my mind's always going a mile a minute.
Sure.
But I will always remember every little detail of that case to like what occurred. Other details I'll have forgotten because it's not important, but something like that nightmare will always follow me to this day. It just the feeling I had in that nightmare, like it was part of me. Like even though like it was like that angel devil on the shoulder kind of thing. The devil saying you do it. The angel saying don't do it. You know, it was like that within my consciousness. It was crazy.
Essentially it was a dream, but it was almost a trauma as well. I mean, to go through something like that, even though it was a dream. And it's interesting, it wasn't just like you were on rails and watching this happen even through your own eyes. You had emotions, you had feelings. When you woke up from that, what were you feeling at that moment in time? Like the moment you kind of came out of that?
It was startling. It was startling. Like if I had a very sick stomach to blood, I probably would have vomited. I think anybody that would be someone that can't watch gore would have came up from that dream probably having some sort of expulsion of their fluids. And but it was like a cold sweat. You know, it was like, what did I just experience? Like, what was that like? But I think what was the craziest thing, which made it all real to me, was that when I got there, the family that I had in my nightmare was to the full detail, like their eyes, their face, the length of their arms, the length of their, you know, legs, how tall they were in general, like their color of their eyes, the color of their hair, the house, the exterior, the environment was all to the detail of my nightmare. The interior was all to the detail to certain object that I never have ever seen in that damn house, but for certain were there present. And that was what really scared me the most. It scared me. I have to use that word, but it didn't deter me from my goal of attempting to help this family overcome with what they were dealing with. But it still was scary to pull up to that and say, I think the reaction afterwards that weekend was more centerfold than me waking up. Like me, I was startled, but I also thought, oh, maybe this is my mind getting the best of me. I didn't think it was like a demonic interaction. It was like a demon trying to play with my fears. I thought it was just my mind getting the best of me, you know, because sometimes, you know, you don't know what you're getting with and dealing with.
Yeah.
You hear these people's stories, you talk to them, but still there's an unknown element to your environment, to what you're going to. Are they truly just crazy? Is this the hills that have highs, or like, are they really dealing with this demon, or are they just something unexplainable that you can help them with if it was natural? So there's always that like moment of like, not doubt, but like what could go wrong. So I thought it was that at first. So like it was just trying to, you know, startled, like, oh, like what the heck? Of course I said worse things than that, but the reality of how real it was when I got there was, I think I had to catch my breath. Like I didn't let, like I said, didn't let it deter me, but it was like, I for some people maybe seeing the Grand Canyon for the first time, it was like awe-inspiring. Like this can occur. Mm-hmm. They can play with your dreams, and they can, of course, affect your livelihood in any manner they wish they can, as long as you let them as well.
Yeah. I mean, that must have been just kind of, you know, spine chilling as you get to the house and you're like, oh my God, I know this place. I know these people. And it was because of that dream. Was there a moment where you said, maybe I shouldn't be involved in this? Or did you, you know, just to kind of connect those dots immediately and go, something really didn't want me to be here. And that's all the more reason to be here.
Dots came very fast, because that nightmare was, of course, on my consciousness all week. Yeah. You know, like I said, I killed kids in my nightmare. Yeah. That's how prolific it was. And something I will always remember, because I never want to ever have to do that action or feel that action. You know, I was in the military for a short time, and the one thing I dreaded, and thankfully I never did, the one thing I always dreaded was going overseas and having to save my brother, my battle buddy, because a kid was coming at us with a bomb. What do I do? Like, of course, those things are in your mind. You know, you have to think of these things, like, if you're going to be battle ready, because if you go battle ready without, like, the what ifs, mm-hmm. you're probably going to internalize and ball up and break. So you always have to be ready for some sort of ramification or repercussion. So I really connected to the dots right away. Mm-hmm. But it definitely, I don't want to say it gave me doubt, but my hopes was that, you know, my faith in God, why we were there helping this family overcome, that would keep us in good tenor with our minds and our bodies, and we could not be affected by what I believe necessarily was there at that point after connecting the dots. So, you know, we went in there with our game faces on and strong. You know, I think you have to look at a sports player. Some are bad examples because some fold under pressure. But, you know, I'm not a big Patriots fan, but look at somebody like a Tom Brady who come back at the fourth quarter because he's able to get his team in order, get himself in order, and play a hell of a goddamn good game. And that's what you kind of have to do. You have to pull your crap together. You have to have a level head, you know, you have to have your head on your shoulders. Mm-hmm. So you have to get ready for game time, to use in that analogy. So it took a few, like I said, it took my breath away. It really went to my equilibrium, but you have to recover from that. And because you're about to meet this family for the first time. And of course, when I met the family, it kind of was breathtaking as well. But at this point, I've already kind of seen the house, like, this was real. Like, now this is real. Like, it was like a domino effect. But throughout this, you have to keep your composure, because if you don't, and you show that you're wavering to this, that how can you help the client at that point? They're going to have no faith in what you're there to do. And there has to be a component of that. Yes, there is, you're invoking God, in my opinion, but you still have to be the chain link to that connection for it to happen. And if they don't have faith in you, they're not going to have faith in what words you're saying to get to them to that point. So you have to keep your composure. And if you fall apart, they're most likely going to fall apart with you.
What did you experience in that house?
So, you know, funny enough, and this is how it usually happens, it was quiet. It's like a chihuahua, right? they bark. They might bite, they might nibble at you, but they mostly bark a lot. And you know, that's how some of these cases are. You know, they're very theatrical in the sense of when it's not time to put your game face on. Like when the family is deterred and in fear, this is when things will occur. Once again, the human element, they're feeding into it. They're part of it. They're part of the chain link of the reaction of what's going on. But when there's a mediator in there that can keep your, and I've always not always like this. I don't want to sound like the knight on white knight on shining armor, because I'm still a human. I faltered many times and I do my best not to. And you know, I have unfortunately, in my opinion, failed clients because of misadvice or, I wasn't able to help them and, maybe led them to the wrong person and they were affected from it. So I made my mistakes and I have to own up to that because we're human. And that's how you learn and you get better. But I learned these things. Now I know not to do it. So you always have to handle the client a certain way. If that makes sense.
Sure. So you said it was silent. Was there like literally you got there, no activity, nothing whatsoever? Was there anything that had to be done?
So we basically was there. I do believe it was a demonic infestation. So I didn't perform the minor rite of exorcism. Mm-hmm. What I performed was a deliverance over the home. Usually you would say you deliverance over a person. Mm-hmm. But the easiest interpretation of a deliverance over a home is basically it's more of an empowered house blessing, as a minor rite of exorcism is like a tenfold house blessing. That can be done by a lay person and can be done by deacons and stuff like that. But of course, I wasn't a deacon at that point. I was an ordained minister, but I did do a deliverance over the house. I did say prayers of healing over the individuals. I gridded the property, which is of course placing metals at the four corners. Also doing a salt barrier. Of course, there's a lot of analogy why salt, it's been, you know, scares, you know, makes vampires count every parcel of a salt, or it deters an evil spirit from coming with in a presence. There's very old ideologies on that and beliefs. So, you know, you put a salt around that and it creates this positive bubble, this environment. And so that's what we did, but there was really no reaction. You know, yes, of course, it was an uneasy feeling as this thing lurked. Mm-hmm. But of course, in the same manner as we need water and food to live and have energy to process the vitamins and stuff that we get from these items we intake, the demons need that same thing. If they're not being fed by fear and negativity, the possibilities of them sparking within our environment is possible. But it lowers the possibilities. Yes, you could put a digital recorder on and catch things, which has happened in cases. One was I was a part of was on my ghost story. It was called Demon Shadow. And, you know, they weren't. I don't think even a question was being asked at one point. And it says, "I will drink your blood." And it was very prevalent. Mm-hmm. It was just inputted. Like, and I don't, you know, of course, being involved in that case, I definitely believe it wasn't the team that did so. It was quiet. We never necessarily touched it. I never remember anything that could stand out within a recording.
Yeah.
And when I'm there doing a blessing and stuff like that, I do sometimes record it with a digital recorder, but most of the time I do not record it because I'm not there to collect data. I'm not there at that point to understand or not. At that point, I really did believe that what they were dealing with. I didn't, of course, come out and tell them the dream I had. I'd never said that, never disclosed them that information, because I think that would have made it worse. But I also never claimed it to be a demon either. But I truly believe it was a demonic infestation, and I did what was necessary that day. I did not investigate it. I did, of course, my interviews. Mm-hmm. But at that point, after having that nightmare and having all those things be shown to me the way they were, I went straight to a blessing, like a deliverance of the house, prayers of the people, the gritting. Basically, after, you know, of course, sitting down with these people, talking about their story a little bit, doing the third part of the interview phase. But after knowing what I experienced and dealt with in that nightmare, mm-hmm. I knew it was no necessary reason to collect data. And that's what sucks about sometimes those situations, because I really do believe they are personal moments. Yes, some psychologists and counselors will record your session, but most of them don't, unless they ask you for like maybe like a class study or something like that they're doing and they need to. Of course you can say no, but usually that's in the private of their own circumstances. And that's how I feel about this. I'm not trying to get them on television,
sure,
or prove to people that these exist. I at this point do believe they exist from what I've experienced. But, you know, it was quiet, you know, nothing ever occurred physically. I don't believe we collected EVPs, yeah, or digital recorder sessions during that night because of what occurred. So
once you do a blessing on something like that, where you have no other than the dream, which was quite prolific, but without anything occurring that night, and you do this blessing and everything is silent, just as well as it could be if there was nothing in this house. Did that blessing, do you believe, did that rid the home of this, or were these things almost hiding from you? And without coming out and showing themselves, are they affected by the blessing?
I truly think they were pushed out. I don't know if it was my power. I think, like I said, it's through the invocation that what you call upon. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you change the environment, they feed in darkness. They prey on fear. They're master manipulators. They're parasitical entities. So if they can't be fed, they will, you know, scamper. And where the problem is where people, you know, everything will be fine for a while,
mm-hmm,
and then they falter and it comes back, because it's like a predator. Once it has its prey, there could be a very long period of time where this thing always attempts to come back into this individual or this family's life. And this is a testament. This has been documented by many theologians, you know, even saints such as Padre Pio. And non other religious figures. So it definitely could come back, but the nature of it is, I do believe the blessing's ritual of positivity. It is there to invoke these positive forces if they do exist, which I do believe they do. As long you, of course, give the homeowners guidance of what they must continue doing. It's if you are a drug addict and I come and do a blessing, and one of the reasons that you deal with this is because you're a drug addict and you kind of called upon it by the vices that you have. And I'm not saying drug addicts are bad people, but sometimes the actions we do create a repercussion that we don't think will occur. And if you bless their house, you have to make sure that they go to therapy and go away to become clean or do what they have to do not to do those drugs again. Mm-hmm. If you bless the house and they continue doing the drugs, the possibility of it working slim to none. But if you can change the shift of that environment and get everybody on board and they feel comfortable, in a lot of ways, even though I do believe in the invocation and there being a God, a lot of it is psychotherapy. And as long as they feel good about it and it works, even if there's nothing there, that puts their mind at ease and then they're at comfort. But fortunately, after doing that blessing and stuff, it did ease. Yeah, I did have to deal with that case here and there at points in times, because, you know, when you break your leg, you have to learn how to walk again. Sometimes you need help. So, you know, of course I dealt with it for a while, but after that initial blessing, yeah, it really quieted. They really changed their mentality from being fearful and questioning it or being very provocative to it,
mm-hmm,
provoking it. They quieted, they got intertwined with their religious belief system again, which was positive for them because it brought them together as a family. You know, they told them to talk to a therapist because there was marital issues at present, maybe to the naked eye not be seen, but there were definitely marital issues. I told them to seek out therapy, which they did. You know, they were willing to take the tools that were given to them to tell them this is what could help you, not maybe fix your situation right here and now, but this is what's going to give the biggest kitchen sink to what you're fighting and throwing at it. And hoping that this is the 1-2 punch that knocks it out, the Mike Tyson KO. but sometimes that doesn't happen. And I told them that this, I was real with them. I gave them the tools. So yeah, the initial blessing was quiet, but in most ways it worked. Yes, they dealt with little nicks and knacks and paddywhacks here or there, but that was an attempt for this predator to get back into to feast on its prey, and they did not allow it to occur. So there was consultation that still occurred, and I did go out there one other time to ease their mind. But other than that, it was it simply was, I think, more thanks to the people that lived there. But you know, they also were able to capitalize on their faith and realize that they weren't bad people. They have to fix their issues, and they were able to take that. And that was that's what's important.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with James Anito. A big thank you to him for joining us on the program and sharing his experiences with us today. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening.